Welcome to another G4 Guitar podcast. My name is David Hart and I am the founder and the program director of the G4 Guitar International Franchise Network. If you want to find out more information on G4 Guitar, please visit our website at g4guitarmethod.com. That's the letter G, the numeral 4, the word guitar, method, .com. And it's all one word. Today's topic is why running lessons on time will make or break you. So I'm talking about your business here. Why the actual of running of your lessons, so in other words, starting on time and finishing on time, is critical to the success of your business. And this is sometimes people have a kind of a casual, almost lazy attitude towards running efficiently, but even running a couple of minutes late can literally make or break your success in business. There was a quote, a very famous quote by Woody Allen that said that there are different quotes, different variations, but we'll just say that 50% of success was running on time or turning up, I think it was the actual term, but meaning to be there on time, to turn up to auditions, to say you're going to be somewhere when you say you're going to be there, and to really be efficient about the way that you do things. You could look at rail systems around the world. If you go to, say, somewhere like Japan, and you compare that to somewhere where, like, I live in Australia, places like Sydney, where the trains are often cancelled, often late, and they even brag about the fact that trains are now running 80-something percent on time, as if, hey, look how good we are now. Where traditionally trains were late most of the time, and it really causes people a lot of frustration, stress, disruption. And sure, you can go and do meditation and study yoga and all that sort of thing and allow yourself to be calm about it, but that's you as an individual handling other people's systems and the way they run things, and the rail system in Sydney, we have to live with it. But if you go to somewhere like Japan, then the system runs extremely efficiently. The trains, I've been to Japan many times, and I don't even remember a train ever being late. I can't remember once where the train didn't come in on time when the clock said. Now, this is quite a difference to what you find in a lot of other places. And what happens, obviously, in Japan is nearly everybody uses the train system. The train system is very, very popular. People really love it and they appreciate it. Whereas in somewhere like Sydney, even with its high score of 80%, as it's claiming, and there's also a lot of cancelled trains, by the way, it still doesn't help. It's still, you know, people just don't want to use the trains if they can avoid it, so they end up using their cars, etc. So if there was a competing system, which the car is, and that's why Sydney roads and Sydney cars are so busy, the traffic in Sydney is insane. But let's just say there was another competing train system and the other train system ran on time, I can guarantee you, even if the trains weren't as nice, even if they were a bit more expensive, that particular system would probably be a lot more successful because they run on time. And if all other things were equal, absolutely you can guarantee. So being on time can be just that one thing that makes the difference between you and your competition. It's one of many things that will help you, but it is one thing that will definitely define many people. So let's just go through a few of the points about being late and what it means. Late, in my opinion, is really disrespecting other people's time. So if you've made an appointment with someone, you say at 4 o'clock, I'll be there, I'll meet you at that particular restaurant, and you have a habit of turning up 5, 10, 15 minutes late so you can make some kind of entry, you know, whatever your reason is, it's disrespecting that other person. That other person values their time. Now, I used to have a friend some years ago who would routinely turn up late, and then, it, you know, 5-10 minutes late was acceptable. I could handle that, you know, for a friend. But then what I found is that it became longer. And so what I was doing was I started turning up later. I would turn up 10 minutes late knowing that he would likely be at least 10 minutes late, but then he started turning up 20 minutes late, and then it just got ridiculous. I'm sorry, but I can't be your friend anymore because you're unreliable. I can't do it. I value my time too highly. Now, you might think, well, you know, a good friend would be forgiving, but no, a good friend is not going to disrespect other people's time. And this applies to your clients even more to the point, because these are people who are paying you for your time, and they're paying you to run on time, and you're you're being disrespectful by running late. Even 1 minute, 2 minutes late is a sign of disrespect for that person. Now, the bottom line, of course, is that you're going to lose many students for being late. Everyone has a different tolerance level for lateness. So some people are going to be okay with 5 minutes late, where other people will not be okay with that. 5 minutes is already too much for them. So those particular people, you will lose them. So let's say you enroll 100 students, and out of that 100 students, 10% have a tolerance up to 5 minutes. They can handle being 5 minutes late, but beyond that, they're out of there. So those 10 students drop out. Now, when you look at a business, the overall and the profit margin and the expenses and so forth, that usually about half of those students for most guitar schools is about half of it covers their expenses and the other half covers the profit. So if you lose 10 students, you've actually lost about 20% of your income. And so just for being 5 minutes late. Now, if you run 10 minutes late, then you are likely to lose a much bigger percentage, maybe 30%, 40%. I don't have exact numbers because I never ran late. I made it a policy not to run late, but I do know of teachers who I've had under my employment who've run late and they've lost students as a result of it being late. I've had complaints from students and parents, etc. So I do know that it has a large effect, but also I know myself. I know that I don't tolerate lateness very well. If I make an appointment with somebody and they're late, I don't hang around. I don't wait long. And if it's something where I figure maybe, you know, they have a reason or excuse, you know, I just to give you an example, I purchased a very expensive program. I'm talking thousands of dollars. This was a program of mentoring and coaching from someone who I'd been recommended to as a good coach. And I thought, okay, well, I'll give them a try. They had a money-back guarantee, so I was willing to give it a shot. Anyway, I paid for the program, and I said to this particular person, okay, you tell me when I can book an appointment. And they said, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever it was, 10 o'clock, be there or be square. So I said, okay, done, I'll be there. Please let me know if that time doesn't suit for any reason. I often will say that as a tagline. Anyway, it came 10 o'clock that day, they didn't turn up. And so I thought, oh, okay, something's gone wrong. So I tried contacting them. About a day later, they came back to me and said, really sorry, my internet was down, I wasn't able to contact you. Even though, obviously, there are other ways of contacting phone, etc. Okay, that's fine. Let's make another appointment. So we made another appointment. Again, they didn't turn up on time. So then I asked for a refund. They got quite upset saying that I was being unreasonable because, you know, the first wasn't their fault and the second they were just running a little bit late. I think they said that they were 10 or 15 minutes late when actually I hung around for about 20 minutes and they didn't turn up. So I ended up refunding that. And that cost them thousands of dollars. And I don't know how many times they've done that. But not only does it affect that particular situation, it affects an ongoing situation with me spending more money or gaining referrals. And it also affects their reputation. So being late is not going to serve your business very well. It's going to affect you big time. So we're really going to dig down into this and look at some of the reasons, because I really want to convince you that running on time is not only something you must do, it's something that you're obligated to do. It's something that your clients deserve from you. And also I'm going to go into how to do it. So if you do have an issue of running on time, if this is something, and I'm assuming if you're listening to this, if it's something that you feel that you're struggling with, then I'm going to give you some tips on how to get it done. Okay, so thing about running late is that it's basically a signal or a sign that you're not well prepared. So this sends out a subconscious signal sometimes to people. Sometimes they're very aware of it, but sometimes it's subconscious that they see you as being unorganized. And if you're unorganized, you can't even run on time. How can you possibly run an efficient lesson? How can you be a very good teacher if you can't even organize yourself to run on time? That's the subconscious message that often goes out there. So run on time to send that message that I'm prepared. And the best way to do that is to be prepared, is to do the things that you need to do to ensure that you do run on time, that everything happens in its place at its right time. And if you can run efficiently like that, then people will... It's actually all tied in together. If you're running on time, it means that you must be organized. You must know what you're doing and when you're doing it. And that means that you're going to deliver a better lesson and a better quality experience for your students. So everybody wins is the bottom line here. So think of a gig. You're given a 1 hour spot to play so many songs. Now, if you don't prepare for that, in other words, you don't work out which songs you're going to do, how long those songs are going to go for, how much time do you need to change between those songs. If you haven't got that worked out and you get up and do a gig, and I've seen these kind of gigs where the band gets up, they've got an hour before the next band has to come on, and they've played, maybe they've got 9 or 10 songs to do. Let's say they've got 10 songs, and they get to their 7th song, and then they're being told, they're being ushered off stage because that's it, that's all the time. And they're like, but our best songs, we've still got a couple of songs to do. These are our best ones. These are the ones that really get the crowd rocking. Sorry, your time's up. And they feel almost shortchanged because their inefficiency was the reason that they were running late. So think about it in those terms. Rehearse for the show. Be prepared. Make sure that you're running on time. Another thing here to think about is what I call compensating. Sometimes teachers will feel compelled to give students more time. And I know that everybody's been in this situation. You've been there. You have a student who is asking questions at the end of the lesson, and you're engaged in this conversation, and you don't want to suddenly stop because you feel that if you don't continue this situation or this conversation, that the student will drop out. In other words, they're asking you something that seems important to you and to them at the time, and for you to say, look, I'll have to chat to you about that later, feels like you're cutting them off and almost being rude, but it has to be done. This feeling often comes from the fact that you don't feel that you've delivered enough value in their lesson. So they get to the end of the 30 minutes and you feel that you haven't really given enough and they want more. They're like, well, that 30 minutes, I really don't feel like I got a lot out of that. I still have more questions. I want, can you explain what chords are and how do you play them and what do you mean by this scale? I don't quite understand what I'm supposed to practice. And this often happens where we have, I see teachers at the end of the lesson, the student is confused about what they're supposed to be doing. What do I practice? I've just done this lesson, but I'm really not clear. And that's because the teacher hasn't run the lesson in the right way to ensure the student knows a couple of minutes out that or what needs to be practiced for that week. So they should know before you get to the end of the lesson. The last couple of minutes of the lesson should really just be wrapping up and shouldn't be trying to explain and answer questions about what to practice. So think about the lesson that you give, and when you have that experience, think about what happened in that lesson. Why did I end up in that situation? And does this situation reoccur? Is it something that's happening again and again and again? Do I find that I always end up with these students who are having these, confusion about what to practice? They're asking questions at the end of the lesson when time's up about what to do and what this means and what that means. Are you doing these things at the right time? Are you sequencing your lesson in the right way to ensure that when you get to the end of the lesson, that it's done. Everything's packed up, ready to go. You move on to the next student or the next group of students. So think about when you buy a meal it was an ordinary meal. Do you want this? Do you want more of the same meal? So if you get the meal and that was average. I don't really feel like I got a lot of value. Sure, if you're still hungry, you might want more of the same thing. And sometimes if it's a good meal, maybe you want more. And that can happen. If it was a great lesson, maybe they want more. But if it was a great lesson and they do want more, they're going to get more next week. And you've given them what you're going to give them. And they're going to still be happy with that. They might want more, but they're going to be happy with it and they're going to be back next week for more. But if they've had an average lesson, a lesson which they think, didn't really feel like I got my value, I really want to get more out of this experience, so they start asking you more questions in order to feel like they're getting more value, or even if it's subconscious, I bring it back to that meal analogy. If the meal was average, giving them more of an average meal is not going to make the meal better. What you want to do is give them a better meal. In other words, you want to give them a better 30 minutes. So next time the 30 minutes is really good value. So you want to improve the quality and the content and the delivery of your lessons and not make them longer. It's not about making a lesson, extending the lesson. It's about giving them a better experience. So more is not better. Better is better, is what I always say. So let's move on to how to run your lessons on time and to ensure that you start and finish at the right time. Here are some tips that will work, and if you want, you can write these down, but just keep these in mind. First one is put a clock where you can see it. Have a clock that you can see from wherever your positioning is. Generally, what I would do is I would have the students facing me, and then behind them there's a wall, and on that wall there is a clock. So I can see the clock. Now, some teachers say to me, I don't want to be a clock watcher because that makes students feel like, you know, I'm just watching the clock. And well, there's nothing wrong with that. That is exactly what you should be doing. And if anyone questions it, say, yes, I am watching the clock to make sure that we stay on time and stay on track here. I want to make the most of your 30-minute lesson every week and every time. And I need to know where we're at to ensure that. So if you have anyone who questions that, the idea is not to be looking at the clock from the point of view of, I can't wait till this is over. You don't want to send that message, but you want to let people know that, yes, we are running to a clock here, guys. We're running to a time, and we need to get everything done within a specific amount of time. So don't use a watch or an iPhone, because a watch requires you to, you know, look down and look at your wrist if you've got a watch. A phone requires you, obviously, to click on the button and have a look at the time. The clock is always there. It's very easy to see, and it won't disrupt your flow. So the next thing is to stick to a set format. At G4 Guitar, the format is what we call 5, 10, 10, 5. Those who are G4 teachers will understand that. And what you want to do is do the most important things first. And that way, if you get kind of caught up on the most important things, it doesn't matter if you don't get to the unimportant things or the less important things, let's say. What you can always do is skip over that. But start with the most important topics of the day. What is it that you want to cover? So, for example, in G4, we start off with picking. We always start off with, as a warm-up and just a general technique exercise. Picking is what we consider the most important skill. So we want to ensure that that is looking good and on track. So we always start with the picking. Then we do a skill, and the idea is that that we pick on the skill that needs the most work or is a high priority. If you find that you're really getting into that skill and it's worth spending more time on, you don't need to do a second skill. You can continue on with that skill right up until the last 5 minutes, where you should really go into doing something like a song or some orals. Just allow that last 5 minutes as a buffer. By doing songs in the last 5 minutes, you have a bit of fun, you lighten up, there's no real pressure there, and it gives you a chance to sort of round up and wind up the class before you end it. You can also throw in some question time there if they need it. So I tend to throw question time at the beginning, at the end. The idea is just to ask no more than three questions, so students have no more than three questions in that first 5 minutes. Question, yes, can I ask this? Bang, bang. And if it's a question that requires a long answer, I'll say, I can't answer that now, but I will send you an email or I'll do a blog on it and I'll let you know. So the idea is that you write those things down, just make a note. Maybe someone says, hey, can you explain to me what modes are? Well, I can't really do it right here and now. You guys are beginner guitar students. It's a long thing, but I've got a blog on modes, so let me send that link out to you. Look out for it. Or you could even say it'll be on the next newsletter. Check out the next newsletter, guys, because I'll put something in there about modes. All right, so let students know that some days you're only going to do one skill, some days you're going to do two skills, that it will vary, so that they're not expecting a particular, you know, two skills every time. And this is really directed at G4 guitar teachers, where we talk about doing two skills in each lesson. So you can say, as a general format, we do two skills, but sometimes we're going to do one skill. So they don't sort of do one skill and they go, hey, what about the second skill, when you've just spent 20 minutes on one skill? Now, this is really important. Maintain the control of your class at all times. There is a time that people should be listening. There is a time for questions. There's a time for actually learning and following instructions, in other words, doing. And you need to be directing that. You need to make sure that you're in control, that this is question time, this is listening time, guys, so no playing. This is action time. Now you need to be doing what I'm asking. With children, you can stick to what I call the two rules, Rule number one, play only what and when I ask you to. And rule number two, put your hand up if you have a question. So those two rules, I'll just say them again. Play only what and when I ask you to. Number two is put your hand up if you have any questions. This keeps you in control. You don't want students playing things that you haven't asked them to do, and you don't want them playing at the wrong times. You want them to do exactly what you ask them to do when you ask them to do it. This is not a democracy. As much as we love freedom and democracy and we read all about it and hear all about it, this is not a democracy. This is the 30-minute class. I only have 30 minutes to get you guys learning as much as possible and doing as much as possible. So I'm not going to waste the time talking about the virtues of a democracy. I'm going to use the time to show you what is the best way for you to practice so then you can take that home. You've got all the time in the world once you get out of this 30 minutes to do whatever you like. But I'm going to use this 30 minutes. This is my time. This is, you are paying for my time, and I'm going to deliver to you absolutely. And I'm going to make sure that I start and finish on time and give you a full quality lesson. So to help with this, you can develop signals like conducting an orchestra. When you watch the conductor of an orchestra, you'll see that they're using lots of little signals to conduct the orchestra in when to play, what to play, how to play, sometimes slow, fast, etc., etc. So that's what the conductor's job is and the role of the conductor. And everybody else's job is to follow the conductor, to be looking at the conductor for instructions and to stay with them. Otherwise, it's going to sound terrible. And that's the same with your classes. If you conduct your classes like a conductor of an orchestra, you'll end up with these beautiful flowing classes that get massive value out of your lessons, who really feel that they're part of something special. And that's what you're aiming for. You're aiming to be like the conductor of an orchestra. And if you haven't seen this in action, you probably have, I'm sure, go and watch a few conductors, watch the way that they control huge audience. Go and watch some of the school orchestras and you'll see. But these are kids where they've got these teachers up front conducting what are often young children to do what they do, and do it very well. So yeah, check that out for sure if you can. For an example, if a student was to put their hand up and it's not a good time for a question, you want a hand signal. I use kind of a little down signal with my fingers, just sort of going down, 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 to let them know to put their hand down at that point. And that means not now, no questions right now. I'll come back to you later, but not now. So when you initially put groups together and you've got new people in groups, they're not going to know your hand signal, so explain them to them. As the new people come in, explain that what this means is that I'm going to get you to put your hand down. Does that make sense? Yep, great. So you're teaching them the signals. You're not just expecting them to know. And it's more about teaching them how to operate in your class and how to learn and how to follow your instructions. This is how you're going to be able to run your classes on time. If you're conducting your class like the conductor of the orchestra, then you will be in full control and you'll be able to start and finish your classes on time. And really, if your classes are running late, starting late or running over time, it's a signal that you're not in charge, that you don't have control of your class. It means you need to really work on that and you need to step up. And it's something that just as a kind of an idea, film yourself on video and watch yourself back and have a look at it and ask yourself, what do I need to do differently? Where am I wasting time? Where am I getting caught up? Where are the students controlling the class and I'm not controlling the class? So think about those things. I use things like counting to bring everyone back on task. So for instance, they might first come into the class and they're sort of the guitar and they know with my classes, they knew to start picking from the word go. In other words, down, up, that was the first thing. I trained them all to do that. You come in, you sit down, and that's part of controlling the class. Train them what to do and when to do it. So they knew to do that. So I could even be talking to parents or other students outside, and my class that had just come in were already set up and picking and in action. So they weren't wasting time, even though I still was not in the class. And I'd come in, 2 minutes after starting time, and they were already, well into that first picking exercise. So the idea here is that the counting is that I will say, all right, guys, we're going to do this reading exercise. And one of them, they might sort of be wondering, which one? And I'll say this one here, number four, etc. Number four, guys, here we go. One, two, three, four, clicking my fingers as I go. And that gets them straight into it. They're like, oh, okay, well, yeah. And if they're not quite ready or they're kind of towing the line, so to speak, they quickly get into line because they know they have to start on time. And sometimes I'll start again. I'll go 1, 2, 3, 4, and they've kind of missed the start. All right, guys, let's do it again. Let's get it right this time. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. So really use that as a cue. And it works really well with young kids because young kids are very good at sort of getting off track. You bring them back in. As soon as they hear the 1, 2, 3, 4, they're all kind of, you get their attention. Oh, we're starting. I better be ready. So have set question times at the beginning and the end, which I mentioned before. And also, if students ask last minute questions, just try and write them down and say that you'll email them or do a blog or whatever. Just don't get caught up in answering questions unless you can give very quick answers to those questions. Otherwise, move on and tell them that you'll address the question later. Often you can leave questions because if it's important, they'll come back to you and ask you again. If it's not important, they won't ask a second time. They'll have forgotten about it. Sometimes it's just a question in the fleeting moment. We all do it. I've done it, where I sort of have a question and then I forget it 5 minutes later when the time comes to ask it. And I'm like, probably wasn't that important anyway. Okay, so the next thing I'm going to talk about is analyzing problems. So this could be student problems or parent-related problems. And let's just say despite your best efforts, you're still running over time. What are you going to do? Where are you going to go? How are you going to fix the problem? The thing that I generally say in any of these situations is to get advice. Find someone who can help you with this. Look for someone who you know can do this very well, someone who's very efficient at running on time. Hopefully, once you've sort of studied this and listened to this podcast, you won't need that advice because you've got the main answers here. But if you do find you're still struggling with it, then maybe video record your lesson and observe yourself. Sometimes when you can sit back and watch yourself from that kind of third person, it will give you a different perspective and you'll see, right, I'm getting caught up. I'm getting dragged into these conversations. I'm not controlling the class as well as I could, etc., etc. So what if a student or parent continually asks questions at the end or packs up slowly or chats to another student in the class, causing you to run over time? Now, this is a question that I received from a particular teacher. What do they do? And my answer was simply this: move them along. They are now on someone else's time. You have an obligation to the next group of students to start the lesson on time. It's that simple. They may not like it the first time, which happens sometimes. They may be a little bit offended, whatever. But that's okay. They'll get used to it. They'll realize that that's who you are and you run on time, and they'll appreciate it with the class before you because you don't let them run over time. They will realize, he does start on time. And he finishes on time. That's fair enough. And if they don't get that, if they're not the kind of student who gets that, they're really not your kind of student. If you are delivering good value, you really feel, and most of your students are really happy, and there's one or two students here and there who want to ask those last-minute questions. And I had a particular student who was like this, and he was a very nice guy. I actually really liked him. And I ended up booking him at the end of my shift because I enjoyed talking to him. Don't get me wrong here. We had great conversations and even became quite good friends. But when I had him in kind of an earlier shift, where he was coming early in the evening, he would run the classes over all the time, or he'd try to run them over, and he would be asking, could you just one quick thing, he would say to me. That was his line. Could I just pick your brain for one quick thing? Just how does this chord? And I'd say, not today. Not now. I can't do it. And I said to him, look, we're going to have to put you at the end of the, I'm going to put you at the end of the shift. So then I don't mind because, I've got a bit of time. I can answer some questions, but I can't run the classes over time. I hope that makes sense. Now, the bottom line to all this, we really just get down to it, is that people care about you meeting expectations far more than they care how long your lessons are. Starting and finishing on time should not be a flexible thing. You shouldn't be bouncing around. This should be the standard to run on time. There will be basically two kinds of students: those who are happy with your lessons and those who are not. Now, students who are not happy with your lessons due to the content and delivery they should be considered. You should be asking yourself, why are they not happy with what I'm delivering? In other words, the quality of the content I'm delivering in my lessons and the quality of my delivery. What is it that I'm perhaps missing and that I need to work on? You do need to be aware of this, and you do need to consider this. But you need to ask yourself whether or not that is the case. So students who simply want more time should not be considered, because you have stated from the very beginning that you run 30-minute lessons. That's what they get. That's what they're aware of. Now, it really should come down to, are they happy with what they get for 30 minutes? If they're not happy with the 30 minutes, then and they want more time, they're not your kind of student. That's the simple answer. But if they are okay with the 30 minutes and it's the content in the lesson they're not happy with, which is nearly always the case, mind you, that's something that you can look at, and you can try and see whether or not — it doesn't mean that you necessarily will change, there might be something else there, but at least you know it's not a time issue, and at least you know where you stand, and you can look at it and go from there. And as I said earlier, what people want is for you to be meeting their expectation, and their expectation is a 30-minute lesson, and you need to deliver on that. So basically, in the long run, lateness can really destroy your business. So my final words are, don't do it. Don't run late. Run on time at all costs. Everything else aside, this is the number one thing you need to get right first, is to run on time, start and finish on time. No excuses, end of story. Thanks for listening. And if you want more information on a G4 guitar, you can search on Google for G4 guitar, the letter G, the numeral 4 guitar, or you can go to our website, which is g4guitarmethod.com, to find more information. Thank you very much for your time.